All right, so last time we really got into Chardonnay. It was great. We peeled back all those layers, explored what makes that grape so
It
complex.
was a fascinating deep dive.
Yeah, it really was. But moving on, time to pour a glass of something different, right?
Definitely.
So today, get ready, because we're diving into the world of Sauvignon Blanc.
And what a world it is. It can really be surprisingly diverse, you know? Sauvignon Blanc, you might think you know it,
Right.
but trust me.
Oh, I love a good wine mystery.
Yeah, there are some hidden depths waiting to be uncovered, believe me.
So, where do we begin? Our listener wants to know the basics, right? Where does this intriguing white wine come from? How long will a good bottle age?
Right.
Who are the rock stars of Sauvignon Blanc production? And most importantly, what should our listener expect when they pop that cork?
Excellent questions. Yeah, all excellent questions. And I'm here to help untangle the world of Sauvignon Blanc.
So let's tackle them one by one. All right, first things first, origins. Sadly, our sources don't pinpoint the exact birthplace of Sauvignon Blanc, but they do offer some clues.
Yes.
So take a look at this chart. It shows the global area dedicated to Sauvignon Blanc back in 2010.
Okay.
Okay, so France is clearly the heavy hitter here,
Right.
which isn't a huge surprise,
All right.
but wow, New Zealand and Chile are right up there.
Yes.
Huh. I'm already sensing some serious Sauvignon Blanc globetrotting in our future.
And what's so fascinating here is the spread of Sauvignon Blanc, beyond Europe. It really highlights how this grape has adapted to different terroirs,
Oh,
right?
terroir.
That magical word. Remember, terroir encompasses everything,
Yeah.
right? All the environmental factors that shape a wine's personality,
Yeah.
the soil, climate, even the human touch in the vineyard, it all plays a role.
So just to clarify, could a Sauvignon Blanc from, let's say, the rolling hills of France taste completely different from one grown in the coastal vineyards of New Zealand?
Absolutely. The same grape can express itself in wildly different ways depending on where it's grown.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, for example, you might find that a French Sauvignon Blanc, maybe from the Loire Valley, has this distinct minerality, almost a flinty quality,
Right. Interesting.
Whereas a New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc, that could burst with tropical fruit flavors.
That's pretty amazing. It's like the grape is a chameleon,
Right.
taking on the character of its surroundings.
It really is.
Now, our listener is also curious about aging. How long can they hold on to a bottle of Sauvignon Blanc?
Right.
Will it get better with time, or are we talking about a drink it now kind of wine?
Well, most Sauvignon Blancs are indeed crafted to be enjoyed in their youth. I'd say, within a few years of the vintage. Think of them as capturing that vibrancy, that freshness of the growing season.
So I probably shouldn't be stashing those bottles away in my cellar, hoping they'll transform into liquid gold.
Not necessarily. While, yes, most Sauvignon Blancs are best enjoyed young, there are exceptions, of course. Certain factors, like specific regional characteristics or, certain winemaking techniques, can influence a Sauvignon Blanc's aging potential.
Ooh, intriguing. Examples, please. I'm always on the hunt for those hidden gems that can stand the test of time.
All right, so let's say you come across a Sauvignon Blanc from Sancerre or Puy-Fumé, for example,
Okay.
two really esteemed appellations within the Loire Valley. These regions, they're renowned for their limestone-rich soils. And these soils, they impart a unique minerality to the wines.
Interesting.
And that minerality, that can act as a backbone, allowing the wine to develop more complex aromas as it ages.
Okay, I'm picturing those limestone hills, the vines soaking up all the minerals from the soil. So instead of those bright citrusy notes we might expect in a young Sauvignon Blanc, what kind of flavors would develop over time?
Think beeswax honey, maybe even a hint of gunflint,
Wow.
almost like the smell of a struck match.
That sounds completely different from the Sauvignon Blancs I'm used to. So, if our listener wants a Sauvignon Blanc that can evolve in the bottle, they should look for those limestone-rich regions.
Exactly. And don't forget about oak.
Oh, right, oak.
Some winemakers choose to age their Sauvignon Blancs in oak barrels, and this adds another layer of complexity, structure. Oak can impart subtle notes of vanilla, spice, or toasted nuts, and those flavors can integrate beautifully with the Sauvignon Blanc's natural fruitiness over time.
Oak-aged Sauvignon Blanc. I have to admit, I'm intrigued. I usually associate oak with Chardonnay or heavier red wines. Why would a winemaker choose to use oak for a lighter, more delicate grape like Sauvignon Blanc?
It's all about style, and intention. Some winemakers, they believe that just a touch of oak, it can add depth, richness to Sauvignon Blanc. especially for wines that are meant to be aged. It's a way of showcasing a different side to the grape's personality.
Okay, so aging potential is a bit of a choose-your-own-adventure with Sauvignon Blanc. It depends on the region, the winemaking choices, and speaking of choices, what about those famous producers? Sadly, our sources don't name-drop any specific wineries.
That's true, but they do offer some, let's say, helpful hints.
Okay.
The regions highlighted in our global area chart, France, New Zealand, Chile, those are all hotbeds for Sauvignon Blanc production. And within those regions, certain areas have become renowned for their exceptional Sauvignon Blancs.
Ooh, it's like a treasure map for wine lovers.
Mm-hmm.
So where should our listener begin their Sauvignon Blanc exploration?
Well, we've already talked about the Loire Valley in France, specifically Sancerre and Puy-Fumé. Those are definitely worth seeking out for their elegant, mineral-driven Sauvignon Blanc.
Got it. Loire Valley for that classic French expression.
Yeah.
But what about New Zealand? They're making some waves in the Sauvignon Blanc world too, right?
Absolutely. Specifically the Marlborough region on the South Island. That's become synonymous with Sauvignon Blanc. Their wines are known for their intensely aromatic profiles, bursting with passion fruit, grapefruit, and even a hint of grassy notes.
Grassy notes. Now, that's a flavor I haven't encountered in my Sauvignon Blanc adventures yet. What makes Marlborough so unique in terms of style?
Well, Marlborough has this cool climate, abundant sunshine, and these really distinctive gravelly soils. This combination creates the ideal conditions for Sauvignon Blanc to develop those, you know, punchy, aromatic flavors that have made the region famous.
So it's like the Sauvignon Blanc grape found its perfect playground in Marlborough, where it can really let loose and express its vibrant side.
You could say that. It's a region that's pushing boundaries and redefining what Sauvignon Blanc can be.
All right, so we've got France and New Zealand on our Sauvignon Blanc bucket list. Any other regions we should keep an eye out for?
Well, remember how Chile surprised us earlier?
Yeah.
They've actually emerged as a major player in the Sauvignon Blanc game. You'll find a diverse range of styles there, from crisp and citrusy to more tropical and herbaceous, depending on the specific region and winemaking techniques.
This is making me thirsty for a Sauvignon Blanc tasting adventure. So many regions to explore, so many styles to discover. But before we open that bottle, let's talk about the actual sensory experience.
Mm-hmm.
What should our listener expect when they bring that glass of Sauvignon Blanc to their nose?
Oh, yes. Let's get to the good stuff. So imagine, you know, you're swirling that Sauvignon Blanc in your glass, bringing it up to your nose. What's hitting you first?
I am ready for that first swirl and sniff. Okay, you're the expert. Guide us through this aromatic journey of Sauvignon Blanc.
All right, so imagine you're inhaling those first aromas. You might get this wave of bright, you know, zesty citrus, think grapefruit, lime zest, maybe even a squeeze of lemon. It's like a burst of sunshine in a glass, instantly awakening your senses.
Oh, I can practically smell it now. And that's just the beginning, right? Sauvignon Blanc has more to offer than just citrus, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Alongside those citrus notes, you might also pick up some green herbaceous aromas. Think freshly cut grass, gooseberry, or even a hint of green bell pepper.
Wait, green bell pepper? That's not what I usually associate with white wine. Is that a good thing?
It can be. It's a, you know, classic characteristic of Sauvignon Blanc, especially those from cooler climates. Think of it as a subtle green accent that adds complexity to the aroma profile.
Okay, so we've got citrus, herbs. What other surprises does Sauvignon Blanc have up its sleeve?
Well, depending on the winemaking in the region, you might also encounter some tropical fruit notes. Think passion fruit, guava, or even white peach.
Mm.
It's like the Sauvignon Blanc grape went on a tropical vacation and brought back all those exotic aromas.
Oh, I love that imagery.
Yeah.
So a glass of Sauvignon Blanc can transport us to sunny beaches and lush vineyards all at once.
Precisely. And those tropical notes are often more pronounced in wines from warmer climates like parts of California or Chile. It's a reminder that terroir plays a significant role in shaping a wine's personality.
This is making me realize that Sauvignon Blanc is way more complex than I initially thought. It's like a choose-your-own-adventure for your senses.
Exactly. And we haven't even touched on the influence of oak yet.
Oh, right. We talked about how oak can influence the Sauvignon Blanc's aging potential, but how does it actually affect the aromas and flavors?
Oak aging can add another dimension to the wine's aromatic profile.
Okay.
You might notice subtle notes of vanilla, spice, or even toasted nuts, adding a layer of richness and complexity.
Hmm. That sounds delicious. So oak aging is like adding a sprinkle of gourmet spice to the Sauvignon Blanc.
It definitely adds a layer of richness and complexity. But remember, not all Sauvignon Blancs see oak. Many winemakers choose to preserve the grape's natural vibrancy by fermenting and aging in stainless steel tanks.
So stainless steel is like the minimalist approach, letting those pure, zesty Sauvignon Blanc flavors shine through.
Exactly. It all depends on the winemaker's style and the desired flavor profile.
Okay, my Sauvignon Blanc senses are officially tingling. We've talked about regions, aging, those tantalizing aromas, but there's so much more to uncover.
Stay tuned, because in part two, we'll delve into the science behind those captivating Sauvignon Blanc aromas. Welcome back to our Sauvignon Blanc deep dive. Last time we traveled the globe, right? From the Loire Valley to Marlborough and beyond, really discovering the remarkable diversity of this grape.
It's amazing how the same grape can produce wines with such distinct personalities.
Yeah.
But I have to admit, I'm still a bit mystified. What's the secret sauce? What makes Sauvignon Blanc taste like, well, Sauvignon Blanc?
Right. That's a question that has intrigued, winemakers and scientists for centuries, I think. And the answer, as with most things in wine, lies in this fascinating interplay of factors: genetics, climate, and the winemaker's artistry.
Of course.
But today, we're putting on our metaphorical lab coats.
Okay.
And we're zooming in on the microscopic details that make Sauvignon Blanc so unique.
Ooh, I love a good science lesson, especially when it involves wine. So break it down for me. What's happening at the molecular level that creates those captivating Sauvignon Blanc aromas?
Well, remember those vibrant citrus and tropical food aromas we were swooning over?
Yeah.
Those are largely thanks to a group of compounds called thiols.
Thiols? That sounds kind of familiar. Aren't those found in other things besides wine?
You're absolutely right. Thiols are actually found in a wide range of foods and beverages. Think coffee, grapefruit, even black currants.
Yeah.
They're sulfur-containing compounds that pack a powerful aromatic punch.
So how do thiols contribute to those, you know, signature Sauvignon Blanc aromas? What's happening in the grape itself that creates these compounds?
It's a fascinating process, and it all starts in the vineyard.
Okay.
The Sauvignon Blanc grape naturally contains certain precursor molecules. Think of them as the building blocks for thiols, right?
Okay.
But these precursors, they're odorless on their own. They need a little help to unleash their aromatic potential.
Okay, so what transforms those odorless precursors into the aromatic powerhouses we know and love as Sauvignon Blanc thiols?
That's where the magic of yeast comes in.
Ooh, yeast.
During fermentation, certain yeast strains have this incredible ability to convert those precursors into what we call volatile thiols, the aromatic compounds that give Sauvignon Blanc its distinctive grapefruit, passion fruit, even boxwood-like aromas.
So it's like the yeast is unlocking a hidden treasure chest of aromas.
Exactly. And here's where it gets even more interesting. Not all thiols are created equal.
Right.
There are specific types of thiols that are particularly prevalent in Sauvignon Blanc, like 3MH, 3MHA, and 4MMP.
Okay.
Each of these thiols contributes to different nuances in the wine's aroma profile.
Okay, I'm ready for a thiol breakdown. What kind of aromas do these different thiols bring to the table?
All right, so 3MH. This is responsible for those classic grapefruit and passion fruit aromas that we often associate with Sauvignon Blanc.
Right.
It's the compound that gives those wines their, you know, zesty tropical character.
Oh, that makes sense. I've definitely noticed those grapefruit notes in a lot of Sauvignon Blancs, especially those from New Zealand.
Exactly. And then you have 3MHA, which contributes to more subtle, herbal, even boxwood-like aromas. It adds a layer of complexity, a kind of greenness to the wine.
Boxwood, that's a new one for me. What does that smell like?
Imagine a freshly trimmed hedge.
Okay.
That slightly sharp green aroma, that's characteristic of boxwood. It's a subtle note, but it adds a unique dimension to Sauvignon Blanc.
Okay, so we've got grapefruit, passion fruit, and boxwood. What about 4MMP? What does that thiol bring to the party?
All right, so 4MMP is the thiol responsible for those intense, almost cat pee-like aromas.
White. Happy.
That some Sauvignon Blancs, especially those from cooler climates, can exhibit.
That doesn't sound very appealing.
I know it sounds strange, but trust me, in the context of wine, it's actually a desirable characteristic.
Yeah.
4MMP contributes to the wine's complexity, intensity. It's a very potent thiol, so even a tiny amount can have a big impact on the aroma profile.
Okay, so it's all about balance and nuance. Even those less conventional aromas, like boxwood or cat pee, can add intrigue to the wine when they're present in the right proportions.
Exactly. It's like a symphony of aromas, with each thiol playing its own unique part. And the concentration of these thiols can vary wildly, you know, depending on where the grapes are grown and how they're handled during winemaking.
So, terroir is back in the game. It seems like those environmental factors played a crucial role in shaping the thiol profile of a Sauvignon Blanc.
Absolutely. For example, Sauvignon Blanc grapes that are grown in cooler climates, like New Zealand's Marlborough region, they tend to have higher levels of certain thiols, and this contributes to those super intense, almost pungent tropical fruit and grassy aromas that the region is known for.
So that's why Marlborough Sauvignon Blancs are so famously zingy. It's those thiols working their magic.
Exactly. And then, you know, you have regions like Bordeaux, where Sauvignon Blanc is often blended with Semillon to create white blends.
Yes.
The warmer climate there leads to different thiol profiles, resulting in wines that are more restrained, maybe even with a hint of lanolin or beeswax.
Lanolin?
Yeah.
That sounds more like something I'd find in a hand cream than a wine.
I know. It's a bit unusual. Lanolin is a waxy substance secreted by sheep's wool. In wine, it translates to a slightly oily, almost creamy aroma that adds a unique layer of complexity.
Okay, so we've established that climate plays a key role in thiol development. But what about winemaking? Can those choices in the winery also influence those Sauvignon Blanc aromas?
Absolutely. Factors like, you know, how long the juice spends in contact with the grape skins, the type of yeast used during fermentation, even the temperature of fermentation can all influence thiol development.
So it's not just about the grape itself. It's also about the winemaker's artistry in coaxing out those flavors.
Precisely. It's a beautiful dance between nature and human intervention.
Okay. I'm starting to understand how thiols contribute to those amazing Sauvignon Blanc aromas. But what about those herbaceous grassy notes? Are those also driven by thiols?
Those herbaceous notes are actually due to a different group of compounds called methoxypyrazines.
Methoxypyrazines, that's a mouthful. Do they have anything to do with pyrazines, like those found in bell peppers?
You've got it. Methoxypyrazines are actually found in a wide range of fruits and vegetables, including bell peppers, asparagus, and even Sauvignon Blanc grapes. They contribute to those green vegetal aromas that can range from, you know, subtle hints of fresh-cut grass to more pronounced notes of green bell pepper.
So that green bell pepper aroma in Sauvignon Blanc isn't just my imagination, it's real science.
Exactly. And just like with thiols, the levels of methoxypyrazines in Sauvignon Blanc can vary depending on factors like climate, grape variety, and viticultural practices.
This is making me realize how complex Sauvignon Blanc is at a molecular level.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a whole orchestra of aromatic compounds playing together to create those distinct flavors.
It truly is. And there's one more group of compounds we need to discuss. Terpenes.
Terpenes. Those sound familiar. Aren't they responsible for the aromas in things like citrus fruits and flowers?
You're right on track. Terpenes are a huge class of organic compounds that contribute to a wide range of aromas, from floral and citrusy to woody and herbal. They're found in everything from pine trees and roses to, you guessed it, Sauvignon Blanc grapes.
So they're like the multi-talented actors of the aroma world.
Aha, that's a great way to put it. And in Sauvignon Blanc, certain terpenes contribute to those lovely floral notes like honeysuckle or elderflower, and even some of those citrusy aromas.
Okay, so we've got thiols for those punchy grapefruit and passion fruit aromas, methoxypyrazines for the herbaceous grassy notes, and terpenes for those delicate floral touches. It's like a symphony of aromas, as you said. But I have a question. Do all of these compounds stay the same throughout the life of a Sauvignon Blanc, or do they change as the wine ages?
That's a great question. And the answer is yes. The aromatic profile of Sauvignon Blanc can indeed evolve over time. As Sauvignon Blanc ages, those thiol concentrations can actually decrease, leading to a shift in the aroma profile.
So those vibrant tropical fruit notes that we often associate with young Sauvignon Blanc, they might fade over time.
They can. But as those thiols decrease, other aromas might emerge, adding, you know, complexity and nuance to the wine. Remember those beeswax and honey notes we talked about earlier in Sauvignon Blancs from limestone-rich regions?
Yeah.
Those can become more pronounced as the wine ages.
It's like the Sauvignon Blanc is revealing different layers of his personality as it matures.
Yeah.
I'm starting to understand why some Sauvignon Blancs are worth cellaring.
And this brings us back to something we touched on earlier, oak aging.
Right. We talked about how oak can add vanilla, spice, and toasted nut aromas to Sauvignon Blanc. But I'm curious, what's the science behind those flavors? Where do those oaky aromas come from?
Well, oak barrels contain a variety of compounds, including tannins, lactones, and volatile phenols that can be extracted into the wine during aging.
Tannins. We've heard that one before.
Yeah.
They're responsible for that dryness and structure we get in red wines, right?
Exactly. But in white wines, oak tannins are usually present in much lower concentrations. They add a subtle texture and complexity rather than a strong astringency.
So it's like a whisper of tannins rather than a shout.
A perfect analogy. And then you have lactones, which are responsible for those creamy, coconut-like aromas that some oak-aged Sauvignon Blanc have.
Ooh, coconut. That sounds delicious. I never knew oak could contribute those tropical flavors.
It's a reminder that oak aging can be a surprisingly versatile tool for winemakers.
And what about those volatile phenols you mentioned? What role do they play in oak-aged Sauvignon Blanc?
Volatile phenols are responsible for a range of aromas, including spicy, smoky, and even medicinal notes.
Yeah.
In oak-aged Sauvignon Blanc, they can contribute complexity and depth, especially as the wine ages.
So oak aging is like adding a dash of intrigue and mystery to the Sauvignon Blanc.
Exactly. It's all about finding the right balance between the grape's natural flavors and the influence of oak.
Okay, my brain is officially buzzing with all this Sauvignon Blanc science. Mm-hmm. I had no idea there were so many complex chemical reactions happening in my wine glass.
And we've only just scratched the surface. There's a whole world of research out there, you know, exploring the intricate chemistry of this grape.
Right.
But I think we've laid a good foundation for understanding what makes Sauvignon Blanc so unique.
I agree. I feel like I have a whole new appreciation for this grape. But our Sauvignon Blanc adventure isn't over yet, is it?
Not at all. In part three, we'll shift our focus from the microscopic to the macroscopic, exploring how winemakers, you know, in the vineyard, influence the final expression of Sauvignon Blanc.
Welcome back to the deep dive.
Yeah.
We've really gone deep into the world of Sauvignon Blanc, haven't we?
We have.
Explored the science behind those captivating aromas and those diverse terroirs that shape his personality.
It's been quite the adventure.
Yeah. But we're not quite done yet, are we?
Not at all.
Today, we're shifting our focus from the microscopic to the macroscopic, venturing out into the vineyard to understand how those decisions made amongst the vines actually influence that final expression of Sauvignon Blanc.
Great.
Ooh, I'm excited to put on my metaphorical hiking boots and explore the vineyard. So what kind of decisions are we talking about here? I'm guessing it's more than just planting a grapevine and letting nature do its thing.
You're absolutely right. Winemaking is this, you know, collaboration between nature and human intervention, and the vineyard is where that partnership begins. One of the most crucial aspects of viticulture, particularly for Sauvignon Blanc, is canopy management.
Canopy management, that sounds a bit technical. Can you break it down for me? What exactly does that involve?
Sure. So think of the canopy as the, you know, leafy above ground part of the grapevine.
Okay.
Canopy management involves the series of techniques aimed at optimizing the amount of sunlight and air circulation that reach the grapes. This includes, you know, pruning, trellising, and even strategically removing leaves.
So it's like giving the grapevines a haircut.
That's exactly.
Making sure they have enough breathing room. I can see how that would be important for, you know, overall vine health, but how does it specifically impact the flavor of Sauvignon Blanc?
Well, canopy management can have a really profound impact on those all-important aromas we've been discussing. Sunlight exposure, for example, is, you know, crucial for photosynthesis, the process by which plants convert sunlight into energy, which is essential for producing sugars and developing flavors in the grapes.
So more sunshine equals more flavorful grapes. Seems pretty straightforward.
It's not quite that simple, unfortunately. Too much sun exposure can actually damage those delicate Sauvignon Blanc grapes, leading to, you know, sunburnt flavors or even raisining. It's all about finding that Goldilocks zone, just the right amount of sunlight to ripen the grapes evenly and develop those, you know, desirable flavors.
Uh-huh. So it's a delicate balancing act. That's where the skill of the viticulturist comes in, right?
Exactly.
They need to carefully manage that canopy to ensure the grapes are getting just the right amount of sunshine.
And it's not just about sunlight. Air circulation is crucial, too. Good air circulation helps to prevent fungal diseases, which can be a real problem in damp or humid conditions. And it also promotes even ripening, making sure that all the grapes on a vine reach their full potential.
So canopy management is like creating a healthy, happy environment for those Sauvignon Blanc vines, allowing them to thrive and produce the best possible fruit. But I'm still curious about the connection to those specific aromas we've been talking about. How does canopy management influence the thiols, methoxypyrazines, and terpenes that give Sauvignon Blanc its distinct personality?
Well, those aromatic compounds are highly sensitive to sunlight and air circulation. For example, if the grapes are shaded too much, the production of thiols, those compounds responsible for those punchy grapefruit and passion fruit aromas, can be suppressed.
Okay.
On the other hand, too much sun exposure can lead to an excess of methoxypyrazines, resulting in wines that are overly herbaceous and green.
So it's like fine-tuning the volume on those Sauvignon Blanc aromas.
Right.
Making sure that each aromatic compound is expressed in perfect harmony. That's pretty amazing.
Mm.
I had no idea that manipulating the canopy could have such a significant impact on the final flavor of the wine.
It's a testament to the, you know, skill and knowledge of viticulturists who understand this intricate relationship between the vine and its environment. They're constantly making adjustments throughout the growing season, pruning, trellising, leaf pulling, to ensure the grapes reach their full, you know, aromatic potential.
This is making me realize that a vineyard is this dynamic, ever-changing ecosystem. And those decisions made amongst the vines are just as important as those made in the winery. It's like this beautiful dance between nature and human intervention.
Well said. And that dance extends beyond, you know, canopy management. Another critical decision that winemakers face is rootstock selection.
Rootstocks? That sounds like something straight out of a botany textbook. Remind me, what are rootstocks and why are they important for Sauvignon Blanc?
Think of rootstocks as the foundation of the grapevine. They're the root system onto which the Sauvignon Blanc vine is grafted. And most wine grape varieties around the world, including Sauvignon Blanc, are actually grafted onto rootstocks.
Right. You mentioned that earlier. But why do they do that? What are the advantages of grafting?
Grafting offers a multitude of benefits. Firstly, it allows winemakers to select rootstocks that are resistant to certain pests and diseases.
Okay.
Like phylloxera, for example.
Oh, right.
That tiny but devastating insect that nearly wiped out European vineyards in the 19th century.
Right. That was a close call for the wine world. So grafting is like giving those Sauvignon Blanc vines a superhero shield.
Exactly.
Against those pesky pests and diseases.
But there's more to it than just, you know, pest resistance. Grafting also allows winemakers to choose rootstocks that are adapted to specific soil types and climates.
So it's like finding the perfect matchmaker for the vine and its environment.
Precisely. For example, if a vineyard has heavy clay soil, which can retain too much water, a winemaker might choose a rootstock that's known for its drought tolerance, helping to regulate the vine's water uptake and prevent the grapes from becoming diluted. Okay. Or if a vineyard is in a particularly cool climate, a winemaker might choose a rootstock that promotes earlier bud break, giving the grapes a longer ripening season.
That's so clever.
Yeah.
It's like customizing the grapevine for its specific terroir. But I'm still curious about how all of this relates to the final flavor of Sauvignon Blanc. How does the choice of rootstock actually influence those all-important aromas and flavors?
Well, the rootstock can have a subtle but, you know, significant influence on the expression of those aromatic compounds we've been discussing. Certain rootstocks can enhance the production of thiols, boosting those grapefruit and passion fruit notes, while others might promote a more balanced uptake of nutrients, resulting in wines with a more harmonious acidity profile.
So it's like the rootstock is whispering secrets to the Sauvignon Blanc vine.
Exactly.
Guiding its growth and shaping its aromatic destiny. It's amazing to think that a decision made underground can have such a profound impact on what we taste in the glass.
It's a reminder that winemaking is this holistic process, this, you know, web of interconnected decisions that all contribute to the final product.
Mm-hmm.
And for Sauvignon Blanc, those decisions in the vineyard, from canopy management to rootstock selection, play a crucial role in shaping its, you know, vibrant personality.
This deep dive into viticulture has given me a whole new appreciation for the complexity and artistry involved in growing grapes. It's clearly more than just, you know, sticking a vine in the ground and hoping for the best.
Right.
There's so much thought and intention behind every step of the process.
And that thoughtfulness extends to the moment those Sauvignon Blanc grapes are harvested. The timing of harvest is crucial for capturing that perfect balance of flavors and acidity. Harvest too early, and the grapes might be lacking in ripeness and complexity. Harvest too late, and the grapes might become overripe, losing their acidity and developing jammy flavors.
So it's all about timing. Like catching a wave at the perfect moment.
Exactly.
But how do winemakers know when the time is right? What are they looking for in those Sauvignon Blanc grapes?
They're constantly monitoring the grapes throughout the ripening season, you know, tasting them, measuring their sugar levels, assessing their acidity.
Mm-hmm.
They're looking for that sweet spot where the grapes have achieved, you know, optimal ripeness with a balance of sugars, acidity, and those all-important aromatic compounds.
It sounds like this delicate dance, this combination of science and intuition. It makes me appreciate even more the expertise and dedication of those who craft these wines.
And once those perfectly ripe Sauvignon Blanc grapes are harvested, the journey continues in the winery. But that's a story for another deep dive.
I can't wait. This Sauvignon Blanc exploration has been an absolute revelation, from those microscopic aromatic compounds to those, you know, macroscopic decisions made in the vineyard. It's clear that there's so much more to this wine than meets the eye or the palate. So for our listeners out there, I encourage you to grab a bottle of Sauvignon Blanc, swirl, sniff, and savor all the complexities that this grape has to offer.
Cheers to that. And until next time, keep exploring the fascinating world of wine.